From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 5th, 2019. Let's check the calendar. Just in time for spring, the week at Wheel and Sprocket Bike Expo is at the fair this weekend. The Bucks are wrapping up the regular season at home, and the Brewers welcome the Cubs to Miller Park this weekend. And I use the word welcome loosely. Well, it's been a weird week. Here are a couple of stories that are not April Fool's gags. Italian scientists who are planning the world's first human head transplant say they are one step closer to starting human trials. That's right, human trials. Man, this is young Frankenstein written all over it. The federal government won't allow marijuana to be certified as organic, but it can't be certified as kosher. Oy vey. And finally, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. The much-anticipated Mueller report apparently is now for sale on Amazon. Read it before Congress does. Yeah, that seems legitimate. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Great start to the first week of the new quarter. NASDAQ climbed 2.7% this week, rising 209 points, closed at 79.39, now up a whopping 20% year-to-date. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P 500 up 2.1%, tacking on 58 points to close today at 28.93, now up 16%, including dividends for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 496 points for a 1.9% advance. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, finishing the week at 26,425. The Dow's up 14% year to date. 10-year Treasury, boy, came up a little bit as you would expect with the market on a tear. Yield now at 2.5%, yield curve no longer inverted. You know, Kyle, you and I did a video that's on the newsletter that comes out tonight where we talked about the market as a wonderful leading indicator, how the market looks ahead 6, 9 months, 12 months even, or more, when the sell-off occurred in the fall, kind of correctly forecast the earnings recession that we're going to see in the first two quarters of this year. Significant rebound in the first quarter of this year, best quarter in 10 years for the stock market, potentially forecasting an end to the earnings recession, perhaps later this year into next year.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think so important for investors to remember that it doesn't do you much good to invest looking in the rearview mirror to look at what has happened, or even really what we're seeing today, but far more useful to look at what we see coming down the road. And so you look at the markets, and absolutely right to say that you have this forward indicator of what investors think is going to happen. And certainly investors are seeing, you know, a return to more normal earnings growth once we get past this first two quarters of this year. You know, right now on pace for about a 2.2% decline in earnings for quarter one. That's a significant number, especially when you consider last year talking about, you know, 20% plus earnings growth on the S&P 500. So there's a lot here on the earnings front. I think that, you know, it's going to cause some concerns as we move through these first two quarters. But, you know, at least from an earnings perspective, and we can unpack some of the other issues I think that might be out there still, but at least from an earnings perspective, forecasts right now call for that to normalize a little bit once we get, you know, into the second half of this year.
I was reading the latest forecast from Capital Economics, well-known research firm, and I was quite interested in their forecast that GDP is going to continue to slow, but they're banking on the Fed cutting rates late this year, which could potentially reaccelerate the economy going into next year. Something that wasn't on anybody's radar screen as recently as the fall, right? As we all know, the Fed was publicly telling everybody that they were still expecting to raise rates 3 times maybe this year. Now, nobody thinks that. They did an abrupt 180-degree turn, And now even some of the preeminent research firms are starting to suggest, you know, along with the futures market in Chicago, that pretty good chance the Fed could actually cut rates later this year. And then, you know, you read into that, you realize, all right, it'll take probably 6 months or longer for the effects of that rate cut to be felt. We've been talking for months now about the waning effects of the tax cuts, how the tax cuts start wearing off. And the economists are pretty unanimous in that, saying by sometime next year, yeah, they'll really have worn off. So there's potential for a rate cut now. And Kyle, we've talked for years about sometimes good news is good news, sometimes good news is bad news, sometimes bad news is good news. It looks like we're going into an environment where good news is okay, but bad news is better because the Fed is more likely to lower rates in the future.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we look at the shape of the yield curve, and we talked, I think, briefly last week about how we had this temporary inversion. And one of the things that's helped that is that longer rates have moved now a little bit higher this week. But the other thing that can steepen the curve is should the Fed decide to back down a little bit from where they are, you'll see the yield curve shift to a steeper place, back to where it was, you know, maybe now at this point 6 months ago, where, you know, we were still talking about the possibility that the yield curve could get to a point where it inverts if the Fed keeps moving, if we really don't expect inflation in the long run. And I think that's where we've wound up, is that inflation just continues to be a non-issue, that as a result, the longer end of the curve really hasn't moved all that much higher, you know, trading in a pretty narrow range over even, you know, an extended period of time now. And so, you know, we could see a little bit more insulation from the potential for an inverted yield curve that could give us, you know, a little bit of cover from what so many point to as an indicator of the likelihood of a recession.
Joel, you wrote an article for the newsletter that goes out tonight on the inverted yield curve. Didn't last long, 3 month yields being just a tad above the 10-year yields, and now the yield curve is, for all intents and purposes, heading back to normal.
Yeah, Bob, it was less than a week, actually, that happened, that inverted yield curve, where the shorter-term rates were higher than the longer-term rates, which is a rarity, but, you know, a lot of people point to it as predictive of economic recessions. And there were a lot of headlines when that inversion occurred, and you remember that the stock market sold off a lot on March 22nd when that first happened, and as you said, it's recovered since then.
And Joel, I think it's so funny when you were writing that article and you and I touched base a couple of times just to look at some of the numbers, the variety of ways that the economic forecasters out there choose to look at that indicator. Is it the 3 month? Is it the overnight? Is it the 2 year? What rate are we actually looking at when we talk about inversion? So that's just one of the variables in terms of how predictive is that inversion towards, you know, the expectation for longer term recessions. But then the other piece that we talked about that's so interesting is you also haven't set a time then for when is that recession going to come. You know, anywhere from a quarter or two all the way out to a year, year and a half, that inversion is indicating a recession that's on its way. And so, you know, I'm always struck by medical tests and the need for them to be specific but also predictive in their value, that they actually have to say not just that this can happen, but this will happen and this is when it will happen. And I think we've had that issue with inversions in the past where they're not specific enough as to the when or the how, even if you do get some of that sign that maybe it's on its way.
And Kyle, one of the points is that, you know, I think that inversion showed what the economists that Bob talked about before, you know, showed, and what we're seeing signs of all over the place is that the economy is slowing.
You know, folks, what we're talking about in simple English here is that when short-term treasury yields are higher than long-term, it suggests that the cost of credit is expanding. It suggests that the lower yields on the 10-year show that the economy is going to continue to slow, that nobody expects inflation to rear its ugly head. The last seven recessions have been preceded by an inverted yield curve. To comment just briefly, Kyle, on your point, I'd always been told that you compare the 2-year Treasury yield to the 10-year, and I found it somewhat interesting that when temporarily the 3-month went above the 10-year, it inverted. So I agree that I don't think that's the traditional sense of an inversion. But we did have 2 inverted yield curves that were not followed by recessions. On the one hand, yes, every one of the last 7 recessions was preceded by an inverted yield curve, but we do had 2 periods of time where the yield curve inverted, and we didn't have a recession after that. So I think it's something to, keep in mind. Joel, let's bring you into the Labor Department came out with their report. I think a lot of people breathed a sigh of relief that we were quite a bit above last month's jobs numbers.
Yeah, Bob, and if you average out, so again, it's showing that the economy is slowing. The first quarter, so the first 3 months of the year, we averaged 180,000 jobs added to the economy per month, and that's nothing to sneeze at. That's pretty good, but it's still down from where we were in 2018, which was 223,000 a month. And I think since President Trump has been in office, we've averaged about 200,000. So, but we're still adding jobs, and it's another record, 102 months in a row that we've done that. Some of the other numbers I was looking at in that employment report was it's the 6th month in a row that the year-to-year average wage has increased more than 3%. That hasn't happened in more than a decade. So that's good news, especially for workers out there. And as always, that tends to fuel consumer spending, and that drives like 2/3 of the gross domestic product. And then the other thing was that there's a number called U6. The U6 rate looks at unemployment rate, which stayed at 3.8%. But it looks at that rate, and it also looks at measures of underemployment. And that rate got down to its lowest level since 2001. So that was encouraging news.
Kyle, you and I were talking about how many manufacturers have been unable to pass on price increases, and that they're absorbing the wage increases, and as a result, profit margins are going down. One of the pretty good reasons for an earnings recession last quarter and potentially this quarter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the S&P has been so dependent upon the expansion of profit margins since the Great Recession as the driver, really, of corporate earnings growth, or one of a few drivers of corporate earnings growth. And that trend has started to reverse now. And you're seeing companies trying to get ahead of that news for the first time, understanding that it's going to be difficult to raise prices when inflation remains as low as it's remained. And yet at the same time, we saw, Joel, as you mentioned, now 6 consecutive months of 3% wage growth or better. Ultimately, that makes its way to the bottom line. And so if you can't pass along those costs, as, the majority of companies out there are saying they're seeing rising wage pressure, but they're not seeing the ability to pass those costs, it's going to come through in profit margins. It's going to make its way to the bottom line in terms of earnings. And so, I think hopefully those corporations find a way to get some of that through to the end customer. Ultimately, maybe that shows up as a little bit of an uptick in inflation. But I think important to remember that we're not talking about wage growth that's even above long-term averages. And so this wage growth pressure, as it makes its way into inflation, still isn't going to cause issues. At least where we are today, that should drive inflation far past what the Fed is expecting.
Art, let's bring you into the program. What's your take on current events?
Bob, I find this to be a very interesting time to be an investor, and an even more interesting time to be an investment advisor. I spent the past few days looking back at and actually writing an article dealing with the last quarter. And the contrast between the last quarter and this quarter couldn't be more dramatic. Last year, late in the year, stocks were clobbered with the major indexes losing, from 11 to 20% in one quarter. In contrast, this quarter, the averages are up anywhere from 11 to 16, in the first quarter. And the difference is, quite frankly, between optimism and pessimism. In the fourth quarter, everyone was concerned about the potential for higher interest rates, or that the Fed had raised interest rates too much, and that a trade deal was going to be very, very that we weren't going to get a trade deal, perhaps, and that the government would shut down. This year opened with the government opening, and the Fed suggesting that they were going to keep rates steady or even perhaps lower them in the future. And even, I think, more importantly, the rumors of a trade deal with China. So if you look at how stocks went up in 2017 in anticipation of the impact of the Tax Act, if we do get a trade deal, and if it all of a sudden takes away the drag on the economy that's been caused by the uncertainty surrounding global trade, it's not inconceivable that we could see quite significant improvement, I think, even in countries like Germany that have been struggling because of concerns about trade. So, Bob, I'm cautiously or skeptically optimistic of what might lie ahead. And as you suggested, I think that's what the market's telling us. You know, you have to listen to the market. But I remain hopeful that we can get a trade deal and that it will justify the current stock prices.
Thank you. Kyle, you and I were talking earlier today about getting a first peek at earnings estimates for the year after next. 10% plus looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, you know, again, we got to get past these first two quarters of this year, but all of a sudden you look at, you know, full year 2019 looks pretty weak. You get to 2020, though, and the full dollar amount for earnings for the S&P 500 on a per share basis, $178 per share by the end of next year. That's where we always thought we were going to be. We just front-loaded a lot of the earnings growth, and now we're going to get a lot more of it in 2020 instead of 2019 than what we thought. And so, you know, if you do the math on how we get there, yeah, that's changed pretty drastically, but, you know, the end result should be very similar. And then, you mentioned that we finally have kind of a first look at 2021, as a lot of analysts have started to put down some numbers for that. And, you know, as you say, maybe another 10% when you look into 2021, that sets up the markets pretty nicely. You know, as a reminder, the markets right now, the S&P 500, maybe a little bit overvalued from longer term averages, but certainly well within the range of normal when you look at it on a forward earnings basis. And that right now factors in two pretty weak quarters. And so, you know, even if stocks trade sideways through the first couple of quarters of this year, through the next couple of quarters, we had such a great first quarter, but through the next couple of quarters, the earnings growth that you then start to get to factor in on a forward basis should set up valuations, should set up the forward PE by later in this year to look pretty tasty again.
Well, that's the problem with forward PEs. You're only going out 12 months. So if the earnings start really accelerating 16, 17 months out, you're not currently capturing that on a forward PE.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, forward 12 months or next 12 months looks a little bit shaky from here, but it's that two of those months are going to be pretty bad and two are going to be just okay. And then you factor in, you know, two quarters of next year and all of a sudden things look a lot better.
Art, as you know, it's pretty unusual that stocks and bonds do really well in a given quarter, but that's what we had in the first quarter of 2019. You have to be happy with that. You know, bond funds are up 2.5%, 3% for a 90-day period. Boy, we haven't had that in a really long time. You know, let alone a really decent stock market, S&P up 13.6% for the quarter. Kind of a question and a comment at the same time. You know, one of them has to be a little bit off.
Yeah, that's what bothers me, Bob. I'm happy with making money, okay, and I'm happy that I made money. Municipal bonds had a good quarter. Junk bonds had a tremendous quarter. Longer maturity bonds had a tremendous quarter. But, you know, we've always counseled our clients, you've always counseled me, to keep our maturities relatively short, keep our quality very high, and so we want our fixed income to be safe. I'm a little concerned about what might happen to bonds. If things do take off, you could have bonds selling off as interest rates go higher. So I'm happy with what we have in the bank. Going forward, I remain cautious, especially about bonds.
And Art, I think important to point out on that bond piece that if stocks do take off, you're going to be ecstatic about the returns you get on the stock piece of your portfolio. And the small hit you take on that safer bond side is going to be fairly minimal in comparison. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe it's a bit of a headwind for your overall portfolio, but that's a more typical relationship, and that's exactly what we would expect mm-hmm. to happen if we get that great environment for stocks that, you know, maybe for a little while at least we're not expecting, but, you know, can always pop up because that's just the nature of being a stock investor.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the program. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.